brought to you almost live from the Dude in the Basement Studios. Why? Because that's where the good stuff is. It sips, suds, and smokes with your smoking host, the good old boys. Suds, suds, suds. It's time for more suds.
It is definitely time for more suds. Welcome to this suds episode where everything good in life is worth discussing. I am one of your hosts here, good old boy Mike. Joining me here at the table is good old boy Dave.
Hey, hey.
Good old gal Juliana.
Greetings, everyone.
And introducing good old boy Drew.
Good evening.
Our sud segments are all about beer, beer, and more beer. Our show today is actually sponsored by A5 Group and Craft Beer Kings. Today's Suds episode is all about collaboration. But first up, we're going to have one of our hosts read our Suds ratings, and Juliana is going to cover those for us today.
We will be tasting and discussing these beers.
Just tasting?
Well,
not chuggling?
I think there is chuggling in order today with some of these. Okay. Anyways. Yeah, so we'll be tasting and discussing these beers and rating them with these Suds ratings, plus our very signature belching sounds. Here are those ratings now. Number one, that sucks. Give me anything but a bud. Number two, what a relief.
Number two is, what's that, a belt?
Oh! Sugar cubes.
Drink.
Yeah, I think I need a drink.
Was that a belch? Number three.
Okay, fine. What a relief. Number four. A body should really not make that sound. And number five. Listen to that hang time. Give me another.
Thank you, Juliana, for that delightful reading of the Suds ratings.
Not completely accurate.
Not, but that's okay.
I don't know how to rate my beers now.
I'm completely confused. I have no idea where we're at. Today's show is a show-and-tell episode. Each host has brought a beer to talk about. The rest of the hosts have had a chance to try each beer, and we're going to go around. Each host is going to introduce a beer, discuss their tasting notes, and then we'll actually get to rate the beer with our Suds ratings. All of these beers involve some form of collaboration. And brewing, a topic which we have discussed in the past as well, which are our collaboration beers actually better? Are two brewers better than one? We'll revisit that question as well as talk about these beers today. I thought I would actually toss out a slightly different question to get us going on talking about collaboration beers, which is, are we seeing more or less collaboration beer and possibly why? Anybody up for answering that one?
I'll take that first.
This should be entertaining.
No, this is my serious voice, so you'll know I'm serious. I think that we're seeing more collaborations, and I think the reason that we are seeing more is in part because we're seeing more and more craft breweries open all the time. And, you know, with technology and travel being the way it is, the world is getting smaller and smaller. And I think people, American brewers are really enjoying the ability to, you know, even though they may be, you know, one brewery may be in Colorado, another may be in Denmark or somewhere, or, you know, wherever, it's still way easier to get together, collaborate, come up with something great, and get it out in the market.
Yeah, I agree that definitely there's a lot more commercial brewing that's going on. I think it's just a excuse to get out of the brewery.
Yeah, so, could be.
You know, that is one thing that I noticed, a conversation that I had with Corey King from Perennial Ale last year when, you know, I was just getting to know him and chatting and stuff. It was very interesting how he was kind of marking time. you know, he has a lot of things on his production schedule there at Perennial Ill. But it was interesting, the things that he mentioned very early on is, I'm going to go do this with Odell. I'm going to go do this with, you know, Russian River. I'm going to go do this with New Belgium. And, you know, he, you know, he was almost marking time by the number of collaboration brews, as opposed to saying, you know what, I have this really great side project, you know, Saison, that's coming out in 3 months. It was interesting that the very first things that he was going to, you know, was talking about what he was doing with other brewers. So there's a tremendous amount of community as well.
Oh, totally. I mean, and it's kind of like lends itself to this whole gypsy movement in craft beer making as well. You know, like love, I mean, as an ode to the Family Feud episode, you know, the brothers. Yeah. You know, the fact that they not only are gypsy brewers, but they're collaborative gypsy brewers. And it makes it really easy because, you know, you go to another brewery, say, hey, can I borrow your equipment? And then next thing you know, hey, you know, why don't I just brew with you and make something really great? And, I mean, most of the time it works. Sometimes maybe it doesn't. But, you know, you get an A for effort. But it's helping the community of craft brewers, you know, sort of like, you're able to work together. It's like in an all-star band, you know? You've got all these great band members from different bands.
I gotta have more cowbell, baby.
Wow. And then you add the cowbell.
I got a fever. And the only prescription is more cowbell.
Now, which brewer would be playing the cowbell? As they go,
What do you think, Drew?
I'm stroking my beer, my beard silently over here.
Don't stroke your beer.
Don't stroke my beer. I'll sip my beer.
Well, we'll think about that story. But I agree. You know, they're getting together naturally, and it's just a natural part of the outcome of that community, right?
Yeah, I mean, and that's what, you know, for me, helps make me love craft beer that much more, because you may have a great brewer, you know, a great company, and then they don't mind hanging out with somebody else and doing something collaborative.
Yeah.
You know, they don't mind. In fact, they love it. And that's what's so cool is everyone's like very down to earth.
As an anecdote, I've got a very strange beer background. I sort of backed into it. Backed into my background.
Oh, he's getting into my beer already.
I know, right? I did some restaurant consulting for a bit and started consulting a client that wanted to open a brew pub, and so he flew me out to the Craft Brewers Conference in Washington, D.C. Back in 2013, I want to say. And the first thing I noticed is the first thing that a lot of people notice, and it's, you know, written about on any industry blog, the craft beer collegiate atmosphere. Everyone wants to see everyone succeed. A rising tide raises all ships, if you will.
Oh, sure, because it helps take down the man.
Of course, you know, I will say that while I agree just mathematically that we should see more collaboration beers arise because of, you know, the points you made that more and more breweries are opening, there also is a lot of consolidation happening.
Sure.
Which, will it see more collaboration? Will it see less? Who knows?
Yeah. You know, we talked about that a little bit with one of the other beers I was considering, you know, was a collaboration that was born out of consolidation itself. And we're not going to talk about that beer. But, you know, I do think that to Drew's point that if you go through, you know, some elements of industry consolidation, other purchases by macro brews or even, you know, combinations, you know, within the craft beer, you know, market itself, will that improve, you know, the quality of the brewing or even, you know, these concept of these collaboration beers, you know, how is that going to be impacted by it? So, but, you know, if anything, I think it's just, it strikes me as not only an excuse for travel, but I think it's a nice break for some of the brewers that, they get to take a break from making the same things, you know, over and over and over. You know, there are some brewers that they just absolutely thrill with the fact that they can make, you know, the same thing so consistently day in and day out, because that's the real trick, you know.
Yeah, sure.
But then there are other brewers that they miss their days of playing around with ingredients, and, you know, they they may have a pilot system that they experiment, you know, with certain measure of ingredients, but when they are infusing that same collaborative spirit of, you know, I'll call it, you know, two homebrewers in a garage, you know, type atmosphere of, you know, creating something once again, you know, it has an element of carrying over into their commercial practices as well. So I think that it's a natural part of the passion, I think, of some of the brewers that extends, you know, into these collaboration brews as well. So,
well, and I think too that for a lot of the smaller ones, it's a chance to get their brewery's name out into marketplaces that they otherwise would never see, like the Beer Camp series. You know, that did a lot for a lot of small regional breweries.
Yeah, definitely. Well, let's talk about the beers that we brought today to introduce those beers to our audience, and then after we go through this quickly, we'll step around and talk around each of these beers. So, Dave, what beer did you bring today?
So, the beer that I brought is called The Beacon. It was a one-time brew between local Middle Tennessee breweries Yazoo and Calf Killer. One of my true favorites.
So, Juliana, what did you bring today?
I took a little bit of the West Coast and the East Coast, and I brought it together. It's Grassroots Brewing, which is a collaborative effort between Anchorage and Hill Farmstead, and it's called Arctic Soray.
Cool. Excellent. Drew, what beer did you bring today?
I've got something a little more mass market. It's a 2014 Lips of Faith Cigar City New Belgium collaboration, a ale brewed with Anaheim peppers.
Huh. Nice. Okay. Achihuahua. And the beer I brought is from Westbrook Brewing. It's a Westbrook Brewing. I need some more beer. It's Westbrook and Stillwater. It's called Big Tasty's Backdoor. I know Dave he can't get enough of this. So he just loves the name of this. So those are the beers that we get to talk about today. We're going to go through, again, each of these beers, and each host is going to introduce their beer, get to offer up their tasting notes, but not their suds ratings. And then the rest of us will get to pound down and see if we actually like the beer that you brought. So those are our show and tell rules. All right, Dave, you're up first. So let's talk about this beer from Yazoo.
And Calf Killer.
And so. Calf Killer. Yeah, I'm sorry.
We de-emphasize one and emphasize the other.
No, I just know that Yazoo bottles the beer, so that I guess that's why I think of it as a Yazoo beer. So,
well, as anyone who has lived in or traveled through Tennessee knows, it is not the friendliest of beer states. We did have the highest, I believe, beer tax, and now we have almost the highest beer tax. But in 2012, Yazoo Brewing and their head brewer and owner, Linus, decided to take a stand, and he collaborated with the Sergio Brothers at Calf Killer. The Beacon shines a light on Tennessee's crappy beer tax, and it is an ale brewed with smoked German oak, smoked wheat malt, Tennessee honey, a little bit of Calf Killer's roasted coffee, and uses Calf Killer's house yeast strain, which I believe is Belgian in origin. I cannot say this is my favorite beer from either brewery, but the reason I brought it tonight is because I think it was brewed for a really good cause, and it shows that collaborative brews can be more than just fun. They can really be used to help the beer community and small businesses in general.
So, some other things I know about this beer is they actually crafted this beer, you know, specifically for this, you know, marketing awareness, you know, around the beer tax here. And it actually was born out of the Tennessee Brewers Guild. Mm-hmm. And specifically so that they could demonstrate the solidarity that they had, you know, in equal taxation, you know, across the board. And so this was a it's an interesting way of using, you know, your beer to make a point, at the same time, you know, making great beer. So a couple of interesting facts is that Calf Killer, based in Sparta, Tennessee, does not distribute it in a bottle. And so that's the reason why, right, some of you are going, I've never heard of Calf Killer. And the reason why is because it's a very regional, you know, distribution base. And we all love, you know, Calf Killer. I mean, Dave and Don are they're awesome. You know, I can't say enough great things about their beer. Plus, I just love the name of their beers. I mean, who doesn't love the name Sergio's Old Evil Ass Bullshit Ale? I mean, that is just such a killer name of beer. I think he sits around and just comes up with stuff like that all day long.
That was actually named for their dad, by the way.
Well, you know, I just, the two, Dave and Don, are just, they are so charismatic. I mean, if you think their beer is good, their personality is just amazing. I just love to sit within like 10 feet of them. They're just so fun to be around, and they love what they're doing. And it was really great that people were able to finally obtain some beer that they had a hand in making. Because normally, you know, again, their distribution is like about 150 miles, you know, around Sparta, Tennessee. And so this enabled a lot of their beer to actually travel in a bottle where it had not previously gone. So that's great. So what are some of your tasting notes on this beer, Dave?
Well, bearing in mind this beer was brewed the last part of 2012. So I do think it held up in the bottle fairly well. Having said that, smoked malts are not everyone's forte or their favorite taste. To me, the aroma was a little bit like a sock, not a punch, an actual sock that you put on your foot. Once you taste it, though, you do get a hint of the smoked malt. I didn't pull a lot of roasted coffee flavors out, but I did get a little bit of the honey sweetness in the back. So I thought it was, I think it's a pretty decent beer.
Yeah. Juliana, what did you think about Yazoo and Calf Killer's Beacon here?
I remember it being decent when I had it live. It's just very, malt, smoky. It's still on my tongue.
What's your suds rating on this?
A two.
Was that a belch?
Sorry.
Drew, what'd you think about Yazoo and Calf Killer's Beacon here?
Well, I unfortunately did not get to taste it when it was fresh. Having tasted it now, I must agree that it is definitely smoky above all else. I didn't get any coffee. More of a light, nutty undertone to it, if anything. I'm going to have to give it a three.
A three. Ah, what a relief. My tasting notes on Calf Killer and Yazoo's Beacon are... So I actually wrote down this was kind of a bit citrus forward, bitter, and I can't read my other word. So pathetic.
Can't read it, or you can't read it?
No, I can't read my own handwriting. I don't know what I was saying there. Anyway, you know, the one thing I can read here is that this actually got better with time. I have to say, when it was first released, I was like, I am not a fan. But then I'm not a fan of smoked beer.
Right.
So I'll own up to the, to that. Yeah, there are two things that I don't like, hibiscus and smoke.
Wow.
Which are both in this flight. But anyway, you know, I really didn't feel like the smoke was overbearing. It was actually fairly subtle. And I actually think this beer got better in the bottle. So I was not a fan when it got released. And I think this is actually... move to the point that you know, I think people can consume this on a routine basis. So my SEDS rating for Beacon and Yazoo is going to be a 3 as well. What a relief. All right, we're out of the chute, but we're up to the point of taking a segment break here. So we'll take a quick break right here, and come right back and talk about more collaboration beers. Thanks for coming back to Sips, Suds, and Smokes. Today on our Suds segment, we are talking about collaboration beers, and this is a show-and-tell segment where each of the hosts has brought a beer to talk about. We've talked about one of those four, which was Yazoo and Calf Killer's Beacon, and up next is going to be Juliana with an interesting beer made out of that has hibiscus in it. I can't wait for this.
Okay, then. So, Grassroots Brewing Company is an offshoot project of the illustrious Sean Hill from Hill Farmstead. Yay! He had this beer contract brewed by Anchorage Brewing Company. Yay! Another one. And as you crafty beer geeks know, both of these breweries have a love for the things that are soury and saison-y in the world. So, yay to them. Okay. So, this is a saison / farmhouse ale that was brewed with our illustrious Brett, some lime juice, and yes, hibiscus. All of which is wrapped up and aged in some oak barrels. Cool. Sure, redeem yourself. Fine.
I'm working on it.
Whatever. To me, this tastes like a lovely funky Chardonnay. It's got the color of the like a grapefruit. It's a really pretty looking grapefruit, you know, and to me it even has that taste. I mean I know it's lime juice that's in there, but I get that somewhat, you know, grapefruit rindiness out of it. And I do taste the hibiscus, and I'm a fan of hibiscus because I like hibiscus tea. So sorry, there's that. But I think it's a really interesting collaboration, and I'm like so thrilled I was able to get it.
Cool. Remind me, it's Hill Farmstead and Anchorage.
Anchorage.
Okay. All right. Cool. I just wanted to make sure. Drew, what do you think about this beer from Hill Farmstead and Anchorage?
I have to say, upon first taste, I was not too sure what to think. First note I wrote down was effervescent. It's definitely light, little on the drier side. I got lime. The color is certainly grapefruit, hands down. The hibiscus didn't shine through to me. I just a mild floral undertone. I got it on the nose, but it didn't come through in the taste. I did very much enjoy it.
And what's your Suds rating on this?
I'd have to say that's a solid 4.
Wow. A 4. A body should really not make that sound. The name of this beer is Arctic Soiree. I don't think you mentioned that, or I was asleep at the wheel when you said basically everything.
Sorry.
Actually, it's difficult to look at you. I'm staring straight at Juliana tonight because she is wearing a hat
with logo on it.
A hat with a logo for the wrong hockey team. But
you're
that's
hard
okay.
to look
wrong
at.
Yeah, she's wearing a winter cap anyway. So
Mike knows how to talk to the ladies. You're kind of hard to look at.
I've insulted her wardrobe. I've told her hibiscus sucks. I have no idea where to go from here. Please save me, someone.
This you better rate her beer highly.
This needs more cowbell. That's what this needs for sure. All right, so. Arctic Soiree from Hill Farmstead and Anchorage. Say that right? Yes. I always say Alaska. I always get Alaska Brewing and Anchorage. Always, you know. Anyway, this is pleasant. I thought it was a mild sour, sweet, just really great balance. I think of all the hibiscus, you know, spice beers I've had, I love this. This is really good. You know, I thought about declaring this a chick beer when I saw the ingredients, just because I say hibiscus and chick beer rather quickly. But the I have to say, this is a very good entry level, you know, sour beer. I would say for, you know, some people that are, you know, just kind of getting into sours, I'll almost declare this a gateway sour, you know, beer, because it's very pleasant. You know, I actually, you saw me pour more of this after I finished my samples, so that's a dead giveaway. My Sedge rating for Arctic Soiree is a 4 as well. A body should really not make that sound. Dave, what do you think about Arctic Soiree from Hill Farmstead and
well,
Anchorage?
First off, before I go into the beer, when you mentioned Juliana's wardrobe, you probably couldn't tell because she's sitting across from the table from you. She is also wearing red Doc Martin shoes with cat heads on them. So
that does not fit
the Blackhawks hat, Blackhawks jersey, and cat head shoes. So that's my wife, everybody.
Oh, man.
Take my wife, please. So, Arctic Soiree, I agree with you. It's not a sour aficionado's go-to beer, but it's very drinkable. It's very approachable. It's
you're saying this would not win awards at the Cantillon?
No,
tasting.
But I, you know what? I bet they'd drink it.
Yeah,
you know, I think
in a blind tasting, I completely agree.
Yeah,
you leave the word hibiscus out and serve it up. Power it down, baby.
They'd be like, "What is that one?"
This is thing? This is a very rare Belgian goose egg.
Yeah, the yeast is from a very tiny remote village in Belgium. You've never heard of it.
There are people in Europe that are actually picking the hibiscus flowers by hand in Belgium just to put in this beer. Fabulous.
Small children, their fingers.
Yes.
Are, I agree. Yes.
So they don't bruise the petals.
I agree.
Exactly. Yes. Yes. So,
and the hills are alive with the sound of music, too. Yes.
But, I do get strong citrus from this. I also got a little bit of salt. Maybe just be the acidity from the lime juice coming through in a way. But I did like the play between the lime and the hibiscus.
I agree.
Probably the most hibiscus has been said in an episode ever.
No. We had the hibiscus gousse and at Cheeky Monk. Yeah, remember
that? That's right. Yeah, that's we said hibiscus a few times then.
Too. I don't think it was gousse or goza. It was something else, hibiscus. Anyway. Yeah. You couldn't hear us anyway. It was so loud in there.
Yeah.
All I could hear was Michael Jackson music.
Cheeky monkey. So, but yeah, I really enjoyed this beer. I think pretty much anyone who likes beer could enjoy it. I gave it a 4.
A solid 4 as well. How about that, Juliana? Have we redeemed ourselves? Made fun of the word hibiscus so much you thought the beer was going to suck. And it was really good. So, excellent. Thank you for bringing that. Up next is going to be Drew. So, Drew, tell us what beer you brought and all about it.
All right. So, it is the Cigar City New Belgium collaboration from the 2014 Lips of Faith series, released October 2013. It's 8.5% ABV. The tasting notes, Belgian yeast, some Anaheim and Marash peppers, citrusy hops, aged in Spanish cedar. Mm. I will say I had this when it was fresh, and the hop aroma, the esters were very present. It was very fresh tasting. The cedar was very pronounced. I thought at the time that it was worth sticking back for a little while, so I did. And I have to say that the hops mellowed a bit, which is kind of what I wanted. I wanted a little more pepper out of it on the on the first taste, and I'd say that it came through, although with a little warm smokiness to it that I did not anticipate. I wonder if that's the cedar coming into play. I can't say that I would seek it out again, but I'm happy that I set it aside to see how aging came into play. It was one of my first forays into aging a beer of this background, and I'd have to say it was a good introduction.
Well, thanks for bringing this beer. And so Drew and I were talking, before the episode today that Reverend Mark and I were actually at New Belgium on the day they released this beer. And so we actually got to taste it, you know, fresh. I mean, just right there while we were at New Belgium in Fort Collins. And I remember, you know, how that moment went, because we didn't know that that was happening. It happened during GABF for 2013 is when they released this beer. And my first reaction was, yay, you know, this is New Belgium in Cigar City, you know. And then, you know, they passed out the tasting samples, and I had, in both Reverend Mark and I had this just lackluster moment. We were like, ooh, hey, can I have some more Ranger? You know, just, you know, so it was just, it was really this, you know, kind of lackluster moment, you know, that we had, you know, right there. I was really excited with the collaboration, but there were, it just did not, you know, strike us as something that we really liked. There was something about, I don't know, just the, it was off balance. It was just, you know, it was almost brash, was, you know, what I thought about it at the moment. My tasting notes for this particular bottle that Drew brought for this particular episode, I thought that it was kind of malt, hoppy, a bit of citrus. I did not like the bitterness. It wasn't a pleasant bitterness. I don't know if it was a style of wood or whatever that they used, you know, around this. It just struck me as something I didn't particularly enjoy. I will say that I do think it got better with time than the way that it was at the brewery. But my sedge rating for the New Belgium Cigar City collaboration was same as beer.
It's not named.
It's not named. It's just called the collaboration. Anyway, my sedge rating for this beer is a 2. Was that a belch? Dave, what do you think about this New Belgian Cigar City collaboration?
Well, I didn't get to try it before tonight, and I'm a big fan of New Belgium, and I'm a really, really big fan of Cigar City. I have had a couple of other Cigar City collaborations that I don't think I enjoyed as much as I usually enjoy just Cigar City beers. But this one... I thought it was very hop forward, and I didn't know about the cedar until Drew was talking about it, but it kind of makes sense because there was another flavor there. It wasn't the chilies, it wasn't the hops, but I didn't really know what it was, so I thought it might have just been an aspect of the something to do with the chilies, but now the cedar makes sense. I think it rounds out the flavor pretty well. I think the beer is... From the way you described it previously to what I'm tasting now, it sounds like it aged very well.
It did.
In the bottle.
I do, yeah.
I think it was, you know, if I didn't know about the cedar and the chilies, I would think, well, if I didn't know about the cedar, I would just think it was a nice hoppy IPA with some very mild chilies in the background. And I actually gave it a 4.
Hmm. How about that? Body should really not make that sound. Juliana, what do you think about the Cigar City New Belgian collaboration here?
Yeah, you know how like songs will trigger, you know, a memory of like, you know, high school prom or when you met your future wife, husband, whatever. Okay, this brought back a memory of me as a kid. So when I was little and I would visit my grandmother, she had a cedar closet. And my grandfather had this love of these little square caramels with chocolate on them. Anyways, I would get in trouble a lot, and you know, I had to have a hiding spot. So I would grab the caramel that was on the table before you would get to the closet, and I'd go hide in the closet. And so it was a small closet. I mean, there were coats, there was wool, there was, you know, old smells, but there was me chomping on the caramel for dear life. And the smell of the cedar. And that's what I got when I whiffed this. I'm like, oh my God, I'm getting in trouble again. Damn, I gotta run to the closet.
They say smell is the strongest memory sense.
And yeah, thanks a lot for taking me to my past. Now my butt's starting to hurt. But anyways,
wow, this is going
just for the record, I'm married and I have been nothing but a gentleman.
But besides that, yeah, it's an overwhelming, you know, caramel slash cedar smell, which like really blew me away. And then I got like some almost like a tart cherry with the heat, it was weird. You know what I mean? Because you could taste the pepper, but there was still like this kind of tarty cherry with it. Maybe that's the type of pepper that it is, and I don't know much about Anaheim peppers or chilies, but whatever. And then I also noticed that it was really creamy, too. And I thought, wow, this is a really interesting creamy beer, but I'm not drinking a cream ale. Anyways, I give this a 3.
A 3. Ah, what a relief. So, really great beer, Drew. Thank you for bringing that. And so, really enjoyed that trip around memory lane for you there, for sure. And there was... You didn't get in trouble for any beer in the course of that story?
No.
No.
That's I was like flipping 7. What do I know?
Well, you know.
I was drinking rock and rye. I wasn't drinking beer.
I knew that it was going to come around to that somehow, some way. Well, we've enjoyed talking about 3 of the beers so far. Listen, we're going to take a segment break here. And we'll be right back. I'll talk about the beer that I brought, as well as we'll probably talk a little bit more about collaboration beer as well. So come right back. Thank you for joining us here on Sips, Suds, and Smokes. Our episode today is all about collaboration beer. This is a suds segment. It is. This is a show and tell show where each of our hosts has brought a beer, and I'm just drinking too much and have no idea what's going on anyway. So next up is the beer that I brought to share with everybody. And Dave is such a huge fan of the name of this.
Say it. Say it.
Back door, baby.
Well, don't say that. First her butt's hurting, and now you're talking about back doors.
That's right.
And your Barry White voice.
That's right, my Barry White voice. Going to be talking about the Westbrook Sweetwater Stillwater Big Tasty's back door. That's right.
Wow.
Take them clothes off. Take them shoes off. I want to see them cat socks, baby. All right, so that's a different episode.
Wow. Get your stuff. Get your stuff, honey. We're going on.
All right, so this beer is
all
from,
yours, Drew.
Yeah, I know. This beer is, you know, this is a slightly different twist on the concept of collaboration. So most of the beers that we've talked about have been a couple of brewers that get in a room and they're like, hey, let's make a beer. You know, I have some ideas, and they kind of collaborate, and, you know, they decide to make it on somebody's equipment, you know, one place or the other typically. This particular beer is not quite down that vein. So let me read the description on this beer. Westbrook's Big Tasty Backdoor is a remix on Stillwater's Cellar Door Saison. A number of herbs and spice known for their therapeutic properties are added to the expand and cleansing aspect of white sage in the original recipe. Then at bottling, they actually added Brett for a funky complexity that will develop over time. So instead of, you know, them actually coming up with a collaboration beer, this is a beer that Stillwater was already making as a saison, and Westbrook's, you know, kind of picked it up here, and they've actually played around with the recipe and said, hey, I think we can do something kind of innovative, new, and different with this. I suspect that part of it is, I don't know that Stillwater has a sour line, and so they maybe just didn't want to introduce, you know, any bread in their equipment at all. And so that may be something that basically they had the access of doing that, you know, at Westbrook itself. But I'm still wondering, you know, through all of this about where did you come up with the name, you know, for this? It's like you're sitting around going, what are we going to name this, you know, beer that's actually just a funky, you know, saison now? And somebody went, I don't know, let's call it Big Tasty, and said, no, we have to come up with something different. Let's call it Big Tasty Backdoor, baby. It's like, you know, so I just really wonder, you know, how that marketing meeting went down and, you know, what were they actually talking about, you know, when they were, you know, coming up with the name.
They had probably had a few bottles of it by the time they settled on the name.
As most marketing meetings tend to go around breweries, that's for sure.
As most meetings tend to go around breweries.
Yeah. That's the reason why, you know, most we enjoy a lot of things about beer. There's just no rhyme or reason sometimes. My tasting notes around a backdoor is, you know, I thought it had a lot of orange peel on it. I thought it was kind of funky. The bread off this is kind of light. It's really well balanced. So this is a very interesting beer. I must confess, I had not tasted this beer before bringing it tonight. I knew the story, but I didn't know the beer. So it was an interesting add into the mix here. Dave, what did you think about Big Tasty Backdoor from Westbrook and Stillwater?
Well, first off, I don't like the way you do your voice when you say that name.
I know, Dave.
Me. I like the name, but you're making me feel a little uncomfortable. So anyway.
Are you claiming sexual harassment on a radio show? I believe
you've created a hostile work environment here. Calling HR right after the show.
I thought he was getting hot, but anyway, you know.
So it's funny that you said the word therapeutic in the description, because one of my tasting notes was that this beer tastes like it would be good for you. There is a very strong herbal blend, sort of like, you know, drinking an herbal tea. It reminds me a lot, actually, of a gruit. A very, you know, an old herbal ale. and I really enjoy drinking those. I do think beer, handled the right way, can be a very nourishing and therapeutic thing for people. So I really enjoyed it.
I drink it as a nourishment each day.
I'm always taking my vitamins, trust me. But I really thought this was probably the best beer that we've had tonight. I do think it smells to me like gingerbread, kind of, by the way. But I gave it a strong 4.
4. The body should not make that sound. Juliana, what'd you think about this, the Big Tasty Backdoor from Stillwater and Westbrook?
Well, I'm a big fan of Stillwater, because I think they might be one of the original gypsy brewers that is out there. Yeah, and I've also been to the restaurant called Of Love and Regret, which is also a beer of theirs. Love. And then, of course, I mean, Westbrook. God, can't go wrong with that place either. This beer was interesting because my first tasting notes were that the smell was very lemongrassy, but it also reminded me of baby powder. It had like a baby powder aroma to it. Yeah. But as this puppy has warmed up, I know you're giving me that look, and it's not just because of my hat. But as it's warmed up, I'm telling you, it's like key lime pie. I'm tasting a lot of lime in this puppy, which I know it doesn't even exist. So it must be the Brett doing something to my taste buds. Anyways, it's very crisp. It's very light. And I really enjoyed this beer, especially as it's morphed into like dessert over here. And I give this a 4.
Wow. A body should not make that sound. Drew, what did you think about Backdoor, Big Tasty's Backdoor from Stillwater and Westbrook?
Well, I do have to say I like the back door.
And good night, folks.
I'll see my way out.
I'm glad we're keeping the continuity of sexual harassment going through this discussion in the episode.
I just play along. You know, you people are nuts.
I saw Dave kind of pucker up right there. You see him, he just kind of rose up about another 3 inches where he's kind of puckering up a bit.
What the... It's like prison.
Don't drop the soap.
Do we need to do a disclaimer at the front of the episode?
No.
Well, I mean, you've got to be 21 years old to drink the stuff anyway, right?
You should be 21 to listen to this.
Yeah, I can hear a 12-year-old going, I'm the back. I like the back door.
Mama, I like the back door. Oh, yeah.
Wow. Wow, who's Big Tasty and what's this about his back door?
I don't know, but I want to know more. No,
give me your phone. You ain't listening to that no more.
I have to say, I agree. I would almost go. I agree with Dave on the sort of herbal note. I'd almost go so far as to say medicinal, even.
Yeah.
The first thing I wrote down was it reminded me a bit of absinthe. Hmm. And then while we were sitting here talking about it, I love playing around with cocktails, and it reminds me a little bit of some things that I've done with Fernet Branca and some different style of bitters. It just, I'm a big bitters nerd.
And yeah, no, I could totally see that.
To take me back to just a few short years ago, not my childhood, New York City, Love and Bitters was the name of the bar, Amore Amargo, and drinking this beer, I was transplanted back ever so briefly. And now that I know that I can buy this in a bottle someplace, albeit I'm sure it's limited. And
no, you know, it was fairly widely available. Okay. Yeah, I don't. I think the distribution of this was really along Westbrook's distribution, which is pretty broad. I mean, yeah. That's. I think they're almost in 13 states, I want to say. Yeah, you can get it any street corner in Alabama.
Yeah.
Wow.
It is.
That's not the only thing. You might find Big Tasty there.
You want some back door, boy?
And his back door.
Oh, I got you back door. Head on over. We'll take care of you real good.
You drive down to Huntsville. Be careful who you ask. I'm looking for Big Tasty's back door. Well, you go down the street there about a half mile. And
tell him Mike sent you.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah.
Yep. I have to give it a solid 4 if I could.
Cool. yeah, body should really not make that sound. So, great. Well, I'm really glad you guys enjoyed that beer. And I did as well. You know, like I said, this was the first time I got to try and enjoy that beer as well. And it was great to kind of throw it in the mix. It kind of was a very interesting flight, for sure. I never thought that I would say I love the hibiscus, you know, and I've been continuing to sip it over here. And so I've really enjoyed that quite a bit, for sure. You know, so I'm curious, after having some of these collaboration beers, you know, kind of coming back to our thought process as we kind of walked into this, I was going to kind of continue the discussion, which is, I mean, do you think, you know, collaboration beers still are a working, you know, product? Is the beer better, or is it just kind of a marketing gimmick still?
I don't think it's a marketing gimmick per se. I think what I like about collaborations is you're getting, for the most part, a really good product. And then you're also allowing some of these little guys that, you know, don't have the money for distribution or for whatever reason do not want to distribute out far to kind of hook up with somebody who has a bigger distribution model, you know, and get it out to the masses so that they can, you know, reap the benefits of that from people that like the collaboration. I mean, I think it's a win-win situation.
So, you know, the one other topic that, you know, I thought we'd come back and revisit would be, you know, talking about how well, you know, collaboration beers were going to do. But, you know, the other topic that I really thought that we wouldn't be talking about is the concept of cellaring itself. And, mm-hmm. Yeah, so in this flight, we had a couple of beers that had been cellared. And I have to say that I was pretty surprised. You know, we've had some interesting discussion about aging beers in the past, and, you know, have had a lot of heated topic, you know, from, you know, some of our listeners as well as, you know, other people, you know, in the beer community as well. And if you had told me that the beers that had been cellared would do well, I would have said no way, because it's just not in that profile. The Beacon was a beer that was one of the beers we had cellared, and outside of 6 months, I would have said no way that beer is going to improve. The other beer we had that had been cellared a bit as well was the Cigar City, a new Belgian beer. And I wouldn't have guessed that that beer would have improved either with cellaring. Any surprises for you guys, you know, about that and the type of beers as well, you know, that cellared?
I'm not, actually, I'm not that surprised about the Beacon just because, you know, smoked malt, a lot of people very quickly get heavy-handed with it unintentionally. Smoke, and this is from a brewing experience, it's very, very easy to overdo it. And beer, luckily, is very forgiving for the most part. Give it its time. And you know, it may take a year, it may take 2 years, it may just take a few months. But if you give beer enough time, often it will, if it's not great right at the beginning, a lot of times it will develop character over time if you store it properly.
Yeah, so, I mean, if you guys had walked into it, would those have been some beers that you would have chosen to cellar?
No.
Yeah, neither would I. I mean, Juliana's shaking her head.
I mean, no offense, but no.
I know.
Yeah. It doesn't fit the profile.
It really doesn't, you know, because we, you know, part of what we talked about is, you know, you're really kind of looking for things that are high gravity. You're looking for things that have, you know, a flavor profile of complexity to begin with. Things that... you know, a lot of stouts, a lot of porters, a lot of, you know,
sours.
Imperial versions, you know, sour lambics, blended beers, you know, tend to do things and things that are constructed for bottle conditioning as well. You don't want something that's, you know, been barrel aged and then they throw it in a bottle and you're like, oh, it's going to get a whole lot better in the bottle. I'm going to get a lot more of the barrel aging. Dude, you just took it out of the barrel. So it's definitely not going to improve, you know, much better, you know, in the bottle, unless you love the taste of glass, you know. But, you know, so I think that when I think about, you know, both of those beers, they just don't kind of fall in that profile. And I would have... I would not have naturally, you know, selected those beers, you know, to cellar or age. So I'm shocked. You know, I am yet again, you know, educated through our own show because I don't know. I kind of been on the bandwagon. People are like, "Well, I think this will do really well with aging," and I go, "No, drink it, man."
wonder if people are going to start, you know, canning is becoming more and more in vogue, and it's more cost effective these days and more socially responsible. I'm wondering, you know, they're less prone for oxidation and light can't get in, so I wonder if more people might try, you know, canning a big barley wine and seeing if that would age well.
Well, so I have a quick 2-minute story here, and then we'll wrap up. So the beer, one of the beers I had this week, excuse me, hang on, I was down in the cellar and I was like, I'm kind of in the mood for something different. And I ran across a can of Three Beans from Six Point. And, you know, Juliana and Dave are going, oh, yeah, I remember that beer. But you know what? I haven't seen it released since, you know, since we had it. So this is almost 2 years ago. If not even longer than that. And I actually had one can left. And I was like, I wonder what this will be like. And so, sure enough, I popped it open. And I'm like, I wonder if this will get better. Because I had remembered, you know, some impressions that we had, at least that I had about that beer was that I just didn't think it had enough coffee, you know, in it. And the marketing concept and the beer just, I don't know, because I'm wasn't matching up, and I just didn't. I was like, "This is not a really good porter to begin with." You know,
it's kind of thin.
Yeah, and so I have to say that it was exactly the same.
okay.
It had all of those
good
same.
To know.
It had all of those same characteristics, you know, that we're talking about. You're right; it was thin. It didn't have enough coffee. I still was like, you know, the porter is still not there. I'm glad they didn't make more.
So it was like frozen in time.
It was, yeah, you know, and so it was an interesting, you know, experiment, you know, just with a beer that I would not have typically, you know, saved like that. in a bottle as well. So,
but that's good. I mean, that's good to know that if you find something in a can that you truly enjoy,
yeah, it'll be fine.
Right, you can hold on to it because it's sealed. I mean, as opposed to capped, and you know, oxygen is still going to make it in through those caps, even if you have those, you know, oxygen-free tops or whatever.
All that Westbrook Goza we have, so we know it'll stay good for a while.
To get us through the hump until it's released.
Yeah.
Again.
Definitely. Well, let's work on wrapping up our show for today. It's been a great discussion. I really enjoyed all the collaboration beers that we got to chat about for today. Thanks to all our listeners here on Sips, Suds, and Smokes. You can catch all of our episodes online on iTunes, SoundCloud, TuneIn, Stitcher, YouTube, Uncle John's Basement, and Spreaker, our native media hosts. Our terrestrial radio stations are always expanding, and if you would like to hear this show on your favorite radio station, send them a 2-year-old can of Three Beans. Actually, I will say, send them that really great beer from with hibiscus in it from where's
Anchorage
it from?
And Hill Farm.
Yeah, I knew I'd screwed up. Anyway, they'll enjoy that. They might put us on the show, put us on the air anyway. Listen, you can reach us online anytime. Our email address is info@sipsudsandsmokes. I love to hear from you. It's really great. Dave, how can fans send you a SS Brewtex flagship 7-gallon fermenter? The Chronicle.
Well, just send me a gift certificate to leave the cork in at sipsudsandsmokes.com.
Absolutely. You did want that one, right?
Oh, yeah.
I got the right one, right?
Oh, yeah.
That's oh, the right one. Yeah, baby. Our daily tasting notes flow out on Twitter every single day. Our handle is @sipsudsmoke. Our Facebook page is always buzzing with lots of news. Sip, Suds, and Smokes is sponsored by A5 Group and Craft Beer Kings. Do us a favor and take the time to rate this episode if you're listening to us online. That's a big help to us, and we get to see your feedback as well. I want to thank my co-hosts for being here today. Dave, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for the tasty back door.
God, he's been waiting hours to say that, hasn't he? Juliana, thanks for joining us today.
Now everyone will love hibiscus.
Yes, I definitely will. Drew, thank you for joining us for this episode.
It was my pleasure.
And maybe he'll come back.
I doubt it.
I don't know. You guys are kind of scary.
I am so. Listen, it's good old boy Mike asking you to join us once again and keep on sipping.
This has been a One Tan Hand production of Sip, Suds, and Smokes, a program devoted to the appreciation of some of the finer slices of life. From the Dude in the Basement Studios, your host, the good old boys, will see you all next time.